Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Here you can listen to our feature interview, followed by some music from Ukraine. In this episode, Oksana Smerichuk talks to the filmmakers who made Ukraine's first full-length documentary on the annexation of Crimea. In 2014, Ukrainians were shocked in disbelief. How could this annexation have happened? The film combines interviews with participants of the events and archival film footage to try and answer this question. Oksana talks to director Konstantin Klatskin and executive producer Serhii Malarchuk about the making of the film Crimea as it was. Crimea as it was is the first full-length documentary on the occupation of Crimea made by Ukrainians. The director is Konstantin Klatskin. The film was produced by DocNote Films and Babylon 13, which is a community of filmmakers recording civic protest in Ukraine since 2013. Crimea as it was is now available online and you can watch it on YouTube.
This week, it's 4 years to the day when the little green men appeared in Crimea and, in a creeping, stealthy style of occupation, took over administrative buildings, took over units of the Ukrainian armed forces, pressured Ukrainian soldiers to defect, took over Navy bases and any Navy vessels they could, ultimately annexing all of the Crimean Peninsula. Crimea as it was is a documentary about those events. It seems that we already know the plot here. We know that Crimea was annexed in the space of about 1 month. Not a happy end, rather a painful ending for Ukraine. Ukrainians were stunned and in disbelief at the turn of events. Why make a documentary about this? Why watch this documentary? With me in the studio today, I have the director of Crimea as it was, Konstantin Klatskin, and executive producer Serhii Malarchuk, to tell us all about it, the inside view of the making of the film. So welcome to Ukraine Calling.
Hi.
Hi.
So first I'll ask you, whoever of you would like to answer, I was intrigued when watching this film because the footage you had, you had two different sources. You can see that some of the footage is like archival footage of the events from 2014. And it looks like it's filmed by participants, people that were taking part in those events in Crimea. And either they were Navy servicemen or observers or journalists. Other scenes were filmed later, interviews, you did interviews with people, also mainly Ukrainian Navy personnel. So how did you get this footage? Is that a challenge?
As you said, we have two different types of the footage. We start from the footage which we made when we have the first expedition. We met the militaries who was in Crimea during the annexation and just have some contact with them and try to just to speak with them what was in Crimea, where they was, why it was like it is. Yeah, and
so these are the interviews that you did.
Mostly, yes. It was interviews. We tried to fix their there at that moment. We start filming 1 year after annexation, and it was like really fresh for them. You know,
they speak very naturally. It doesn't sound like an interview. They just talk like with very natural expressions.
We start after the anniversary, and for them it was they fresh their memories at that time, and when it comes to them and they thinking about this, thinking about Crimea, we have really interesting, really live footage from them.
But I'm intrigued, how did you find all this original footage of people who were present when these events were taking place, the assaults on the bases, for example?
Well, because initially this project wasn't supposed to be a commercial, and that was just a goodwill to do such a documentary with a very little funds. So we called all people who could give us any footage, any material that we can use in a future project about this documentary. So mainly only Facebook was the only thing we could say, hello people, we are going to do some documentary, please send us any material you're possessing relating the events.
So crowdsourcing.
Yeah, for the footage, it was a crowdsourcing.
Wow. Yeah, plus we have some footage from Babylon 13, because we are also members of the Babylon 13. And this footage was made during the referendum, during the annexation. And it was really different footage, because this footage was made by documentalists, the people
filmmakers,
and they make some other accent than, for example, journalists who was there, or just military, navy soldiers, or seamen.
What inspired you to make this film? Like, what gave you the idea in the first place?
Actually, when we start, the main question for me was, what's going wrong in Crimea? Because at that time, there wasn't any like news, like chronic of that time. We didn't know. I know that there was naval forces, but I don't know what they do. It was like some mystery point of our history after Maidan, and it was not so in the focus, because the Donbas start two months after, and the main focus was on them, and Crimea, it's like some mystery point of our history for me. So that's why I start to research this theme.
What did you feel about that? Was your motivation?
Well, at the time when the siege of the peninsula was started, I've been a part of a team at the Ukrainian Crisis Media Center, which was the forepost of information which been coming in, and it was widely discussed what's happening. And as well, if we
can just add, the crisis, Ukrainian Media Crisis Center, was like a center newly created.
Yeah, it was newly created.
It's not government. It's
no, it was independent.
NGOs taking part.
Sure, it was like that, like you said, and people who came from Crimea at that time been reported that something is wrong is going on at the place, that we noticed some militaries coming on with an unmarked uniform, no badges, but presumably it's been a Russian regular forces, well equipped and with a heavy weaponry and etc. And they are coming every day in a big number, well prepared and ready for action. And that was really disturbing. So what we noticed from that time, and of course, the events was like all of unexpectancy for all Ukrainians. As Konstantin mentioned, we've been the whole attention been pointed at the east of Ukraine, but whatever happened in Crimea was another problem. So we couldn't, you know, cope two things at the same time.
Now, one thing I noticed when I was watching this film, I had a feeling of déjà vu, because I was listening to the narratives of some of the commanding officers, and they're describing the events. And I'm watching this with a sense of dread and anticipation, because I know what's going to happen, but at the same time, fascination. And déjà vu, not because of the real events, but also because of, I have seen a TV thriller. Actually, it's a series, Norwegian TV series, Occupied. And in a strange way, I guess that emotion, that feeling is picked up also in this documentary. Although this is not fiction, this is
documentary. The real thing.
But when you were making this film, what were you picking up on? What other things were you finding out?
Well, a close look at the events, the witnesses of events, always interesting, you know, because you are the first place to hear it and to film it. That's the most exciting moment in a making documentary, because you film in the history. It's not a fiction, right? So that makes you feel a bit responsible, not a bit, but on a full scale responsible for people, what they saying, because it's going to be a history. So we did it. And, of course, it was very exciting to find those people, to talk to them, and to hear their stories. And at the time we've been investigating and researching our characters, we realized that we are really filming a history of, well, not the big one, but some parts of history, what happened to those people.
Can you pick a favorite interview?
Well, yeah, all of them.
All of them.
Well, all of them being very emotional, and because those people were very open, and then wherever the length of an interview or story, it makes it very valuable to our history.
Mm. That's interesting how you felt it was very emotional, but it's. Of course, they're all armed forces men speaking. They're not going to be
emotional.
Emotional in a sense, crying or, you know,
I'll tell
raging
you why,
or
I'll
angry,
tell you,
obviously
okay.
angry about this.
Okay, I'll
it's
tell you
It's all very
what.
Restrained because they just, matter of fact, tell you the story. Yes, it's true, though. You can sense the emotion.
Yeah, I'll tell you why it's been emotional, because the main word we had almost from all of them, it was a big betrayal.
Ah.
That's why it became emotional. When we talked to them, what they felt or what they're feeling at this time, they almost all of them said, look, we just lost our families. We lost our friends. We lost everything we've been believed in, you know, and in one day it's all was broken, you know, the family relations, the friends relations, everything, and that was another tragedy, you know, what happened to our characters.
And also they was so open for because of us, because we are not a media or some news, etc. We are documentarists. When we have the first meeting with someone, we just told that, we haven't deadlines, we haven't financing from someone. So if you want, you can tell for us your story, how it was with you. And you, if you don't want, it's yours, okay. But you need to know that your story will be not for us, but for the many people which will live after us. And that was the main. We have other way to get a contact with them and to film this film.
Yes, it's noticeable. They're very. It's rather. There's this quality of openness. They're sort of relaxed in their speech. They'll throw in, you know, four-letter words sometimes, and when they're just chatting, and which says something that they felt.
Well, it wasn't that easy, you know, just to come up to them and chat, you know, because before we came to them, there was the whole row of TV. Interviews, you know, from different channels, and some reporters will change their words or change the meaning of what the servicemen said, and they became just angry with them. You know, they said, we don't trust in them anymore. And who are you guys? You're doing some or making some documentary. Okay, tell about yourself. What was your main purpose to do some documentaries, right? So it was another challenge to persuade them that we are going just to do a true story. And we didn't film it the very first day. We just talked to them. Hello, how are you doing? Where are you from? You know, just to make more friendly.
To make that relationship.
Yeah,
that
just to some contact, yeah. And when it happened, we started slowly the process of filming.
Mm. So you get some very interesting, I guess, revelations from or observations from some of the servicemen during the process. For example, I was struck by one of them says, how can you just be complacent and not feel anything when someone comes to your Navy vessel and says, okay, now it's ours. Mm-hmm. It's the same as, I mean, it belongs to us.
Yeah.
And it's the same, he says, if you own a personal car and someone came to you in the street and said, hey, give me your car. I mean, how do you feel? I mean, there's a lot of, I think, a good way of expressing that, I guess, emotional reaction that they felt.
Yeah, because the other characters are simple people, not a very high-ranked, you know, officers or any kind of. So it was from the private or major or colonel, it was no bigger than that. So the stories are very close to common people, what they felt. So it was like a common tragedy, like you mentioned that very simple example of car seizure. Yeah, so they felt the same because they considered the ship or military vessel is like their home, and you can't just say hello. That is it. You know, now you have to go out from this. From this home, now it's ours or something like that. So,
When we start the film, we try to focus on the emotional part of the narrative because we know that if we will make the film with more informational part, it wouldn't be like more trustly, you know. So when we speak with them, we try to make this like atmosphere for them so they could speak like
in trust.
Yeah, in trust. And the thing like car and your house, because we didn't want to get official information from them.
But still, nonetheless, you do get a lot of information from the interviews, especially with the commanding officers. Particularly what comes to mind is a narrative like Captain, I think, Brigadier Commander Hluchov, mm-hmm. Who was describing in great detail the whole process of how step by step the, in his very kind of, I guess, devious ways that the vessel was, his mm-hmm. ship was, mm-hmm. basically taken, and starting, and there's a whole lot of ambiguity. It's not clear. Once again, this reminds me of, this fictional TV series, Occupied, where there's a lot of tension because you don't know how to react. On the one hand, he says they invited us to a big holiday festival on the 23rd of February mm-hmm. To celebrate the Black Sea Fleet, the joint together, Ukrainian and Russian, and everyone was hugging, flowers. It was nice, good mood. And then the next day, all these little events, which they didn't know how to interpret. Right. They didn't know how to react.
Yeah, I tell you one thing. It's not because of the joint parades and because they used to live together in one buildings. Their kids been attending the same kindergartens or schools. So it was even a story when one of the Navy SEALs told us a story when there was some emergency in Feodosia. They used to give blood to locals, you know. It's like the whole Marines being in a row, you know, just giving blood for some, I don't remember what needed, but it's one of the kind. And the heli squadron commander said, look, it was really a betrayal because we used to do everything together. And in one day, they just come up and say, go away. You just, you know, like a fascist, go away. And he said, it's all of a sudden because we didn't change anything. We've been the same as we were always. And we've been trying to be like to live in one big family. And we didn't divide Ukrainians or Russians. And then he said, it was the very dramatic moment because they said, you are different. You are Kiev junta, yes, something like that. Very abusive things, you know. And he said, yeah, it was the most dramatic thing to his family, to his friends, who say probably something of the kind. Yeah, it was a challenge, a big one.
Mm-hmm. In the process of interviewing people, did you come across, and perhaps researching, did you come across some people that would have been deemed traitors, that defected over to the Russian side or quit the Ukrainian armed forces?
Our film is not about these people, so we have many conversation about them, because as Sergei said, these people living for maybe 10 years, 15 years together, and when you have the crew of the plane, for example, and half of them are betrayers and just for one moment, and it's really hard because
bad for morale.
The crew is like a family. And it's a human tragedy. One of our heroes said that for him it's easier to think that they are dead. Dead, yes. Not so.
I think of these people as being
like dead.
Dead people who betrayed them.
He said, we just buried them, you know. That's it. We don't consider them alive anymore.
That's a very strong statement.
Yeah, very strong feeling. Yeah, very strong feeling. And almost half of them said the same thing. The comparison was like that. We considered them dead people. That's it. We're done.
So how did you research this film? Did you read? Did you go and... you just went and talked to people?
No, there was one of the volunteers who helped in this project a lot, Valentina. She was... very active
volunteer
at the time of the siege, and she said, look, I've got an idea to do some kind of a short movie, and I've got some people who might be of big interest from the historical point of view. And Konstantin said, look, it's not gonna work like that because it's too much. It's too big story, you know, to fit into short social advertisement movie or something like that. And he said, let's go for big. And that's what we did.
We just started film. It was volunteer project for us also. And I think that the main plus for this project was that everyone was in the one line, like in the one minded...
on the same on the same wavelength?
Yeah, on the same wave.
Okay. Well, and because, you know, there was another challenge for us because there was nothing at all filmed about Crimea at the time. The 1 year after, none. So we were the first. We've been like a pioneers exploring this history and filming it. And still till this day, there's very few documentaries, I think about two of them, except Crimea as it was. I think the Crimean Tatars did some documentary about how their people been affected by the seizure, and seems to me one more documentary, don't remember, I slipped my memory, the name of it, and that's it.
Mm. Although you do
for 4 years, three documentaries, come on.
Yeah. Well, you've, I think, contributed to the body of film. That's you made a big contribution.
Thank you.
But although I'd like to point out there were, I guess, little, if you can call them memes, perhaps, that were available previously in social media that then turn up in your documentary film as well. Like one thing that has resonance with me, I think with a lot of people, is that clip of the Navy cadets that... Yeah. They have to watch the raising. Are they a power? I mean, they're way down the bottom of the rung. They have not much say. And they have to watch the raising of the Russian flag over their base. And at the same time, while the music's playing, they sing the Ukrainian national anthem.
Yeah.
So this also appears in the documentary. It's a part of it. And you've somehow found this footage.
Well, there are lots. This footage been given to us, I think, from one of the participants of this scene. He was serving later on the battleship Balta, so like a former cadet of that
academy.
Yeah. So he said, yeah, I'm proud we did it, you know, because it was our attitude to what's happened, towards the event what happened. So it was kind of our protest.
Mm. And one last question. So you started out as a volunteer project, but ultimately you found financing. Was it difficult to raise financing for this film? Where did you get financing?
It was not so financing like to make a big movie. It was financing to finalize the film, to make a cinema copy, to make the color correction, because we can't make this with volunteers. This is the points which we need to have money. And we have the support from the NADC, NATO Information and Documentation Center in Ukraine, and it was really great support, because actually we haven't support from any other structure. We have some volunteer money to make these interviews, to have some voyages in Ukraine, because the heroes of the film, they are in different places in Ukraine right now, and it was hard to get to them.
And Ukrainian Crisis Media Center was helping on financially as well, on the initial point of the project.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. It's been very interesting to hear about more of the details of the making of this film, Crimea as It Was. And with me in the studio, I've been speaking to Konstantin Klatskin and Serhii Malarchuk. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now on to music. There's a band in Odessa called Public Drama. They recently released a new song. It's called Lead Me. They composed the music and lyrics with Dmytro Shuravel. We'll post a link to the video on our website, but for now, enjoy the sounds.
them couples you're dancing solo when you're frightened and no one's around. Lead me and I'll follow you. And I'm the fight. I'll burn all maps and bridges to the rain undivided. I'll start new collisions. So lead me like you know. So lead me as you can. I will follow with devotion. I will follow you forever. Let me stay by your side.
And looking forward, well, next week we'll be back with more conversation with people who make things happen in Ukraine. So tune in again for a new edition of Ukraine Calling. We would be happy to receive any feedback from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org, all lowercase, ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Bohdan Nahailo in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.